Now Gray finds the crease, turns, flips it out. Wide open 17-footer straight away. Mason, nothing but nylon for Bryce Mason. He now has a double-double for the eighth time this year. Timeout, TMP, Beloit by 10. Mason, a shoot over Jacobs. Swish! 6-6 over 6-7 from 17 feet. Beloit's up by 16. The clock will count down. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The student section chanting, I believe that we're going to win. 65-43 for the second straight season and a 19th time in school history. The Beloit Trojan boys are going to the 3A state basketball tournament in Hutchinson.
Well, yes, that's the only team we have moving on to the state basketball tournament in our area. Tough year for our area teams when it came to regionals and sub-state, but one team did make it through, and that was, of course, the Beloit Trojan boys. As they've won 12 in a row, they're 20-3, making their 19th state tournament appearance and hoping to get that elusive first-ever state championship. And they were so close last year to getting it, and they'll have another opportunity this year as they knocked off TMP 65-43 over the weekend in the sub-state finals. That one was not nearly as close as most people anticipated. Beloit played great. Bryce Mason was fantastic. Vinny Pollen was fantastic. The defense was fantastic. And Beloit is playing their best ball of the season at the right time, no question, as they will be the number 3 seed. They lost a coin flip with Wichita Collegiate for the 2 seed. Beloit would have played Colby had they been the 2 seed, and they beat Colby by 24 earlier this year. So Collegiate will get Colby. Beloit will get Nemaha Central from Seneca. I know people from up there. Used to be Nemaha Valley, and then now it's Nemaha Central, the Thunder. And 4:45 is tip-off for that first-round game between Beloit and Nemaha Central. 4:30 our pregame on KD Country 94 and KDCountry94.com. State. We'll start with Beloit, and then we'll recap sub-state from over the weekend. Bryce Mason was phenomenal the last two games. 18 points, 15 rebounds officially, 5 block shots, 7 of 10 from the floor, 4-4 for the foul line. He was tremendous in the win over TMP. His last two games, okay, the two biggest games of the year, sub-state semifinals when they won by 3 over Norton, and then the sub-state final to punch their ticket to state. Bryce Mason is averaging 18 points, 13.5 rebounds, 4 block shots, shooting 70% from the floor, and 4-5 from the line. That's decent.
That's pretty good.
That's not bad.
Yeah.
And we've said all year long, when he plays well, Beloit plays well. When he plays like that, Beloit can beat anybody. Don't want to put too much pressure on Bryce because he's, you know, you're still 18 years old, okay?
Yeah.
But it's true. When you're 6'6 and you play really well, your team has a much better chance of winning, just like your point guard. If he plays well, you have a chance of winning. Guys all play defense on the same wavelength, had a better chance of winning. But there are teams, we see it all the time. There's a key player usually for almost every team out there. And if that person is playing well, they got a chance to really win any night they play. If they're not playing well, can they still win? You bet they still can win. But it's a lot tougher. Bryce Mason was phenomenal the other night. And here's Ryan Eilert on his 6'6 senior center.
Bryce was just tremendous, you know, and his blocks early were just out. I mean, he's up high, and you know, even hitting them off the kid. Once he blocks it, he's so rude that he hits it off the kid, so it goes out of bounds, and we still get it. And you know, he just played tremendous, and you know, Thursday night was no different. And when he's playing at a high level, we're a pretty good team.
Yeah, no question. When he's playing at that level, they blew out TMP. I didn't see that coming. I thought that was a 50-50 game. I thought it could go either way. And on top of that, TMP had a 6'7 kid.
Mm-hmm.
And Mason still was able to do what he did. I mean, the 6'7 kid had a great game, too, Carson Jacobs for TMP. But TMP kind of got, you know, frustrated, and then they got a technical and got a little – I mean, you could see it coming. I mean, Beloit just let their actions speak louder than their words, and Beloit just took care of business the other night. Now the approach on heading into state.
They're a team that's experienced it, so, you know, they're having fun tonight. They're taking pictures. They're smiling. Monday we'll start watching film on whoever we play, and you know, having seniors really helps that, and we have seniors that have experienced it.
That's going to be the interesting part. Nemaha Central, they play on Wednesday. They haven't been to state since Beloit beat Nemaha Valley. That was the last year they were Nemaha Valley. Back in 2014, that's the last time they made it to state. They've had some heartbreakers, Nemaha Central's, in sub-state finals the last few years. So they finally got over the hump. And they beat Marysville. So they are in the state tournament, but they have no state tournament experience, whereas you got Pollen and Gray and Mason and Carson Cox. Those four do. That's important. Of course, the coaches have been there. Of course, John Thomas, head coach, Nemaha Central, he's been head coach for many years, so he's been there before too. But it is interesting that both these schools have had great – I mean, they've made state multiple times over the years, both these, Nemaha Valley / Nemaha Central, Beloit, and they've had great teams. I mean, when I was up there, they had some really good teams. Neither one has ever won a state title. And that tells you how tough it is to win it. Neither one of those schools won a state title, and they have had some fantastic teams over the years.
Yeah, some of those transports from Baileyville and Benedict have won some state titles.
Oh,
yeah,
sure.
But, I mean, you're talking about, you know, experience with a lot of those families.
Well, not now.
Not now.
That's out of the picture now.
But you're talking about complete history, too.
Well, but Baileyville, B&B, I don't count that as that doesn't count as complete history to me, because Nemaha Valley is Nemaha Valley, okay?
Yeah.
And so then Nemaha Central is Nemaha Central. Baileyville B&B is separate. They join Nemaha Valley,
so I don't really. But I'm just saying, you know,
Baileyville B&B won all kinds
of
championships, that doesn't really apply in this.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is some of them families, you know, that have been in that history of that area there have been really good in the past, no matter what we're talking about.
Right,
so,
but there's no
a lot
experience,
of talent that's come through that.
There's no experience in the state tournament.
No, and not at all.
That's what I'm saying here. So, Nemaha Central versus Beloit, that's the first-round game at 4:45. Collegiate will play Colby. I would like to know how the state actually handles tiebreakers for seeds, because I told my son driving home the other night after the game, I said, I will assure you Wichita Collegiate will win the coin flip. They'll be the 2 seed and play Colby, because then Beloit won't play Colby twice. I think the state makes sure that there's no rematches if they can avoid it.
Yeah.
And I think Collegiate got the 2 seed. I think, I don't know who's better, Nemaha Central or Colby. I don't. I know Beloit beat Colby by 24.
Yeah.
So I'm sitting here going, well, you know, Beloit, Colby, that'd be favorable to Beloit. Or maybe that'd be scary because, you know, Beloit take them lightly. I don't know. But I don't know. I have to ask that question too when I call the state today. How do you, like, is there a representative? Who's the witness? Is it a witness from Collegiate? Who's the witness? Is there a Beloit witness there? I don't think there is. You know, because you have to do that right away Saturday night into Sunday morning. It's not like somebody from Beloit's going to drive all the way to Topeka and watch a coin flip.
Yeah.
So I'd like to know how that's figured out, too. Because do they just, you know, well, this would make more sense. Because Collegiate's not played Colby. Beloit hasn't played any Nemaha Central. So we avoid a rematch. Or are they even aware that Beloit Colby played each other? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know either. I'm okay with not having rematches, by the way. I'm not saying that's a horrible thing.
Yeah.
But how legit is it on a coin flip? You know? And then what do you do when there's a three-way tie? That's happened before states. Three teams of the same record, no continent. They're not. They didn't play each other. You flip twice.
Girls, I mean, there's three teams that were 25-0 going into into the tournament.
You can't tell me, like, Central Plains has got to be the number one seed. They are. But there was another team that was undefeated. Do you really think they flipped a coin and it came up Cunningham and they said, okay, let's put Central Plains as the 2 seed? I think Keisha's smart enough to rig that coin flip, don't you?
Yes, because that's what I was saying last week. I'm like,
but if there's no rigging of the coin flip, then don't we need to be watching these coin flips like via video stream?
Yeah, in this day and age, you could FaceTime it or something like that. You know,
right? Couldn't you conference call it? Couldn't you have Beloit and Collegiate both on FaceTime?
Yeah,
something like that, and say, okay, here's the flip: heads is Collegiate's the 2, and tails Beloit's the 2. Do they do that? I'm guessing not.
No, I don't think so, but...
Maybe they should.
Yeah.
I would guess it'd make it for a more legitimate process. I'm not saying it's crooked or anything. I'm just saying Cunningham girls are undefeated, just like Central Plains.
Yeah, and Opie is, too.
And Opie is, too. So there's 3 teams undefeated. How does Central Plains get the 1 seed? Well, trust me, they deserve it. But you can't tell me they flipped it and it just went perfect on 2 coin flips and Central Plains got it, or however way they did it. You cannot tell me that worked out perfect. No. No, so what I'm saying is, I don't think they completely go by a flip. I think they do.
Listen, I think it's pretty easy to be like, this team's on 136 game winning streak. They're the number 1 seed.
Is it 136? Are those higher than that?
Yeah, it's 136, I guess.
I thought it was over 140.
Yeah, it was 111 at the end of last year.
Okay.
I looked it up real quick because I wanted to make sure it was right when I put it on the site when they beat Osborne. So,
so 136 and counting?
Yeah.
Yeah, whatever. Give them a couple extra wins. Get the 140. They're going to have 139. That's where it's going to be at the end of the year.
Yes.
Because they're going to roll. I don't think anybody's going to touch them, but could be wrong. Okay, so Beloit's in, and we'll have the coverage on Wednesday. The other sub-states over the weekend, no other area teams make it a state. The team that had the best chance was, other than Beloit, would have been St. John's Tipton. You had them up in Marysville, and they had their opportunity. It was right there for them, and Heartbreak Hotel.
Yeah, they had a 4-point lead about a minute and a half left, and a kid that doesn't make a lot of threes, you know, we're talking with Coach Bergman after the game. He's like, how many times do you see that in sub-state or state or, like, NCAA tournament where – you know, some guy that hasn't been there all year doing that kind of thing steps up. It was his 8th three-pointer of the season, and you know, he's kind of stepped out and nailed the 3, cut it to 1, and then, you know, Brandon Bates ended up fouling out with 52 seconds left, and that was a 1-point lead there. They made both free throws to take the lead, and then that was, for me, you could tell that was going to be probably the the end of the line. You know, they fought all the way to the end, but could never get back tied or take the lead or anything of that nature in the last minute of the game. So, yeah, heartbreaker for sure for St. John's Tipton. They finished the season 20-6. It was a great year for them. They really did work real hard to get to where they're at. When we talked in the post game, I think this is probably the hardest that any Atlantis teams have had to work to get to where they were. Just based on the talent that they have and the talent that they've had in the past. So, you know, hard fight. Brandon Bates gave everything he had. The senior had a game-high, season-high 27 for St. John's Tipton, but in the end they just fell just short. Great game, though. That whole tournament was outstanding to watch, and on the boys' side. I mean, every team left it all out on the floor. And at the end of the day, somebody has to be the winner, and that was Frankfort, who came back from a 13-point deficit in sub-state semis and then came back from down four late in the game to win over St. John's Tipton and pick up the win to make it out to the state tournament. So congratulations to the Blue Jays on a really good season, falling just short of the state tournament, but seven times in eight seasons they made it to the sub-state championship game and have built obviously quite the program there at St. John's Tipton. So, again, Frankfort winning at 62-59 over St. John's Tipton on Saturday night. The Sylvan Lucas boys, they were up 18-3 over St. Francis in the first quarter on Saturday night in Waukini, but they couldn't quite pull it off. St. Francis came all the way back. They went 48-40 over Sylvan Lucas there in the championship at Trigo Class 1A boys. So St. Francis goes to state and knocks Sylvan Lucas out of the tournament. And then we talked about the Central Plains girls a little bit ago. They got to state by beating Osborne, final score of 89-22 there in Russell in the sub-state championship game on the girls' side there in Class 1A. So that's a recap of all of our area teams that were still alive there on Saturday in sub-state championship games.
Yeah, nobody from the North Central Athletic Association made it other than the Beloit boys. Sacred Heart got beat in the final. Let's see, you know, Mid-Continent League, you've got the Phillipsburg girls going for the first time in school history. They beat Norton at Beloit on Saturday, 40-36. They're going to be good for a while. The sides girl, freshman point guard, is phenomenal. And she's going to get better. She's going to get taller. Oh, my Lord. Phillipsburg's going to be good for a while. Mm-hmm. The only difference between their team last year and this year basically was that she moved up to high school. And they're good. She's fun to watch, really is. Smart player too. And you know, Stockton boys made it to state. And if you're Osborne boys, you're sitting there going, I'm looking at the state. I don't mean to bring this up and bring back old wounds here, although they're recent.
Yeah.
But I look at the 1A state bracket and I'm sitting there going, Osborne would have been the state semifinals.
At least, yeah.
At least. Yeah. At least. Yeah. I mean, because they wouldn't be in the same spot as Stockton. They'd be undefeated,
yeah,
is what I'm saying. And they would have, yeah. And I looked at that and I'm like, wow. just wow.
Yep. Yeah. You were looking at the whole west side there when they split off to go to Waukini and Russell. And it's like, man.
Yeah. Yeah. And
bad night.
Who was the team that Canton Galva came back and beat in football? Was it St. Francis?
Yeah.
Okay. So that was what, 36-0 or something?
Yeah.
8-man title game, and St. Francis is up. And now you wonder about karma and things like that. St. Francis, as you just said, was down 18-3 against Sylvan Lucas.
Yeah.
You're up 18-3. Those are games you're supposed to win. No offense to Sylvan Lucas.
Yeah,
I'm sure they know
that.
It, too.
Yeah.
You're up 18-3. You should win that game. And
especially their style of basketball. You get up 18-3. They, you know, I don't call them like deliberate like some teams I've seen in the past. But they,
like Coach Hestings' teams back in the day?
Like they work for shots. But they take good shots within their system.
Yeah.
You know, they're not going to just stall for a minute just to do it. They're
right.
Actually working for good shots. But you know, their style, when you're up 18-3, it probably wasn't overly easy to make that comeback.
No.
Just because of the way they play. But, yeah, it is. It does feel that way when you see, like, mm-hmm. team do that in football, but then they come back in basketball and make it to state and make that kind of comeback.
Yeah, it's impressive. The boys bracket, Haven, the one seed in Class 3A, will take on St. Mary's. St. Mary's knocked off. I told you they're going to knock off the one seed.
Mm-hmm.
They beat the 3 seed, the 2 seed, the 1 seed at the Royal Valley Substate. They beat Riley County, had 3 losses. They beat Rock Creek, had 1 loss. They beat Royal Valley on their home floor. Royal Valley was hosting it. They won by 1. Will Spradling, former K-Stater, the head coach of St. Mary's, they won all 3 games. They were 10-10 going into Substate. Toughest Substate in the state, according to some people in Class mm-hmm. 3A. And they beat 3-2-1 to make it to state. And it's weird because I remember them, you know, I had Beloit on the ropes last year. Substate semifinals up 10 with about 4 to go. Beloit came back 1 in double overtime. And I remember saying on the broadcast last year, look out for St. Mary's next year because they very well could be at the state tournament. And But then they lost the 6'9", 6'10", freshman kid. He moved back to Minnesota, from what I was told,
mm-hmm.
because he was a big part of that mm-hmm. at the top of a 1-3-1 zone, and he was a good player. And but here we are, 13-10, St. Mary's, after the tough loss last year when they probably should have won against Beloit. And now they're, a year later, you know, redeeming themselves a little bit and having a great run through Substate. And maybe last year's experience helped some of those players
mm-hmm.
when they couldn't finish a game.
Yeah, I mean, any kind of experience like that could only benefit you.
You would think, unless it depresses you.
Yeah.
So St. Mary's against Haven, that's not an easy game for Haven. Haven beat Heston, who was the one seed and only one loss all year. Galena boys are the four seed, 18-5. You always wonder from Southeast Kansas how tough the competition is. I don't know. Galena will take on Burlington. That's an interesting draw there. Wednesday at 8:15. Collegiate Wednesday at 3 o'clock. They're the 2 seed against Colby. And then the 3 seed Beloit versus Nemaw Central at 4:45. To me, the three teams to beat are the 1, 2, and 3 seeds. I think Haven, Collegiate, and Beloit are the three best teams there based on paper and what I know. Although St. Mary's can really spoil the party, I don't see Colby beating Collegiate. And I do like Beloit's chances against Nemaw Central. I think Collegiate and Beloit, I can look ahead. I'm a broadcaster, not a coach. At least in this case.
Mm-hmm.
Collegiate Beloit in the semifinals on Friday at 4:45 would be a fantastic game. Collegiate's got a KU signee. I don't want to say his last name just by itself because that sounds
Grady.
Grady,
yeah.
is his first name. Grady Dick is his first
yes.
is his name, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
So, yes, and insert all the jokes you want. So, anyway, he is an outstanding talent.
I think he's
6'5". K-State didn't even bother recruiting him because they had no chance to get him. And that says what you need to know about K-State basketball in the situation, too, when you can't even get a kid that's in-state. But that's that way. It's been that way for a while, and that's one of the reasons why K-State isn't good every year and KU is. Tradition, things like that over the years, you know how it goes. KU is going to get the best players in the state if they want them. Yeah. And if they don't, you know, they don't get every great player in the state of Kansas. Some guys will go out of state. But the usually the best ones, KU doesn't let get away too often. Kind of like K-State, usually in football. I mean, usually the better athletes, if they have to choose between KU and K-State, they choose K-State in football and they choose mm-hmm. KU in basketball. So there's the yin and the yang. So that's the 3A boys situation. Beloit wins, they'll play Friday and Saturday. If they lose, they're done for the year. Class 3A girls bracket, curious about that. Nemaw Central undefeated. So Seneca's got a lot of people down in Hutch all week long. Their take on Osage City is 13-10. Phillipsburg, the 4 seed, will get Cheney. Cheney last year lost a heartbreaker in the championship to Royal Valley. Cheney, I think, is on a mission. That'll be an interesting matchup there. The Shear girl is fantastic. I believe she's a senior now. And Sides, the freshman, that'll be a great matchup. Frontenac, the 2 seed against Jeff West, the 7. I would be leaning toward Jeff West to win that game. And Halstead versus Scott City. The Colby girls, I saw them this year. They were fun. They were really, really, really good. They lost in the first round of Substate to a 6-13 team. So either they shot a lot of threes and missed them, or somebody got hurt. Because I can't believe Colby girls lost the first round of Substate, but they did.
Yeah.
To a 6-13
team. I saw that. I didn't know anything about the team they played.
And Goodland girls made it to the Substate finals. And that's a team the Beloit girls beat earlier this year. Goodland nearly won and made it to state because they got helped out by that upset by Colby. Kind of like Logan got helped out, or Stockton got helped out by...
Yeah.
You know, Logan knocking off Osborne. Osborne boys aren't the only ones that got upset. Regionals or Substate, that's for sure. Bishop Carroll was undefeated and lost to Andover Central by 2 the other night.
Yeah.
They were one of the best teams in the state. So it can happen. Class 2A, boys' side, Hoxie is a 3 seed. They'll take on Garden Plain Thursday night. You can go check them all out. I'm just trying to pull up something that might be of interest, regional interest. Class 2A girls, Dusty, my alma mater, the Trigo Community, Waukini, Golden Eagles, whatever you want to call them. I call them Golden Eagles.
Yes.
Trigo Community College. Yeah, no, not college. Golden Eagles.
Colby Community.
But when you say Trigo Community, I've heard people say it, Trigo Community College. Like, no, there's no community college at Trigo at Waukini. I'll never forget the person at a debate. It was a debate or forensics tournament. They were having, like, they made up signs with the mascots of the schools that were competing at the tournament up on the lockers. And Trigo had a big tree. That was their mascot. I thought we were the Eagles, but apparently we're a big tree like the Cardinal of Stanford.
Had that happen to me.
Yeah, exactly. Bennington, I was like, what? Never saw that? Only time I ever saw it in my life.
Too. Yeah.
Waukini, the 2 seed against Bennington. Spearville is the 1 seed in Class 2A girls. 1A girls, we wish we had somebody out there, but we don't. Central Plains, 1 seed against Ingalls. Good luck, Ingalls. Hanover, the 4 seed against Otis Spice in a 5. That's a great matchup in the first round. And Cunningham, 2 seed undefeated. I wouldn't be surprised if Chile wins. They're the seventh seed. Cunningham, I don't know who they played.
Yeah.
And then Olpe, as you mentioned, undefeated, somehow lost to Quinn Flips all the way down to a three. They'll take on Norwich. And the 1A boys side of bracket, Brain Academy, undefeated at 25-0, the only undefeated team in 1A boys. And Frankfurt, who beat St. John's Tipton, they'll take on St. John Hudson Wednesday at 4:45. And for the rest of the brackets, they're all posted there at Keisha's website. We got a post as well, ncksports.com, and click on the Keisha link and you can go look at all of the brackets. Anything else you want to add about basketball?
Well, I think that covers all of it.
All right, we'll move on to the KU Jayhawks, who just simply know how to win on the road.
Tech can't win it now unless there was a four-point play. He misses the second free throw. KU won't touch him. A long heave is missed, and you can rock. Chalk it up. 16 wins in a row for Kansas and an outright Big 12 championship.
9-0 on the road in the Big 12. Who would have thunk it? 17-1, the one loss would be at home to Baylor.
Yeah.
That's what happened. Self on the win over Texas Tech. You know, KU knew at halftime. They knew they already had the outright title because Baylor is floundering here at the end of the year. You know, I just want to say I'm mad at Baylor because every year I'm waiting for them to have that swoon. Every year they have a spell where they have a swoon. And I kept waiting and waiting, and I wasn't buying in with Baylor. I wasn't buying in. I wasn't buying in. I wasn't buying in. I wasn't buying in. And then finally they just keep winning, and they win, and they win, and they win. And I'm like, well, the Big 12 is not that good. I'm like, okay, fine. I reluctantly jump on. Baylor's legit. They're not going to be that team from the past that goes on a three-game losing streak or lose 3 out of 5 or 3 out of 4. Well, what do you know? Here we are. Baylor lost to West Virginia. Baylor barely beat Texas Tech. Baylor lost to TCU on the road. They lost to KU, lost 3 of the last 4 conference games. And KU wins the title by 2 games.
Yeah.
And everybody out there in the Big 12 is going, same old Big 12. KU wins, and other teams falter. And it was all won because KU won at Baylor, and that basically put them into a tailspin. It's like they put all their eggs in that basket for that game, Baylor did. And then it was like, well, we're just only going to get a share of the title. That's no good, so let's just go ahead and flop. And they didn't. They're still trying, don't get me wrong. But it was all there easy for KU. To win it by 2 games when there was 4 to play and they were tied, that tells you how badly Baylor fell apart at the end. Bill Self on the win against Tech.
Guys were great, and we didn't play good. But they guard, and that's why we didn't play extremely well. But we did play well on one end, and we rebounded the ball. You know, there was that one possession late where they got a couple that in offensive rebounds ended up hurting us. But to be plus 10 on the glass and to guard like that, wow. It was a great win. It was a no-pressure game, and both teams, you know, really didn't have much to play for other than pride and maybe a seed line, but I thought we were good and certainly made plays down the stretch.
Yeah, KU did what they had to do. They won at Texas Tech. Abaji with a 3-pointer to beat the shot clock. You know, Abaji catches a lot of heat from KU fans. But here's the thing. Not everybody on your team is going to be averaging 15 a game. So he's a really good defender. He's athletic. He had a follow-up dunk in the game. He's not a great three-point shooter, but when he finds a stroke, he's pretty consistent. KU doesn't need him to be great offensively to win. That's been proven all year long. He's had his moments, but Abaji's still a really good player.
Oh, yeah.
And it's amazing. It's like, you know, KU fans sometimes just, you do know your team's not perfect, right? Do you realize that your team's not perfect? Do you realize that there's always going to be one guy on your team that isn't good enough for you, KU fans? I mean, that's all it is every year.
Yes.
There's somebody not good enough for KU. Elijah Johnson wasn't good enough. Tyshawn Taylor wasn't good enough till his final year. I could go on and on about different guys not good enough for KU. You know,
Andrew Wiggins wasn't good enough.
I'll have to admit I'm on that wagon. Andrew Wiggins should have been better than that. He didn't have any alpha dog in him. KU fans sometimes are so hard on their own players. And Abaji is a really good talent. And it's just, remember, he should have been redshirted last year. KU fans so quickly forget things. So do all fans, by the way. K-State, KU, don't matter.
No.
But KU forgets so quickly. Like, you do know Abaji was supposed to redshirt last year, right? You understand that. So he's still doing a pretty good job, and he's in the starting lineup. So, anyway, he had one of the biggest shots of the game the other day.
Yeah.
And KU did beat Texas Tech. West Virginia beats Baylor 76-64. Texas, there you go. Way to go, Texas. It was just a matter of time before Texas laid an egg, right? At home, against Oklahoma State. You get a win. You solidify your chances, maybe. You lose by 22. What were they down? 25-3 or something early in the game? Something nuts. I don't know what it was.
That's what it was.
It was bad.
Yeah, it wasn't good.
At home.
Yeah.
Of course, in fairness to Texas, nobody's there to see it. So did it happen?
Yeah.
Oklahoma beat TCU by 2. That Oklahoma needed that win. That was a big win for the Sooners getting the tournament. K-State beat Iowa State 79-63. More on the Cats here in a moment. Let's put a bow on KU. KU will be number one seed in the Big 12 tournament coming up. They're going to play on Thursday against either the winner of Oklahoma State, Iowa State. That's Thursday at 1:30. We'll have it for you, I'm guessing, pregame. We haven't got anything official from KU. It'd be nice if they sent us something officially today, but they will eventually, I guess. I would guess pregame is around 1 o'clock or something like that because you know how it is. It'll be later than it normally is.
It's definitely not going to start at 1:30.
Because why the Big 12 and why the TV, why they do this is just dumb. I mean, come on. Games last over 2 hours. You got to have a warm-up period. And one game, the first game, 11:30?
Yeah.
Okay, so they put tip time for KU will be 2 o'clock.
Yeah.
That's what it'll be. It won't be 1:30. Why even bother?
I don't know why you just don't do 2.5 hours right away and then...
Automatic.
Just start it. If you think it's going to start early, just wait another 5 minutes
right.
And start it.
Trust me, Oklahoma...
It's K-State scheduled at 8 on Wednesday night, and it's like, no.
Iowa State,
first
Oklahoma
game at 6,
State,
they're not starting
at Iowa 8. State, Oklahoma State, that game won't get over at best at 1:30. At best at 1:30. Because here's the other thing people can't continue... All the replays, all these reviews make the games longer now. You don't get a lot of, I mean, you get some games done in about 2 hours. You don't get games done in 1:45.
No.
So games last 2 hours. Now, there's some last 2:15 or longer. So why would you put a tip time at 1:30 when the first game's at 11:30? The Big 12 continues to do this. Whoever's in charge of this, I guess they do it just to make sure that if we run a little bit ahead, we can go ahead and start ahead. But you're not going to.
No running clock in college basketball.
No, so. There isn't. Texas needed the other day. But anyway, but the interesting thing about KU is Bill Self, it's interesting because I'm a little bit surprised by this, but a pleasant surprise. Bill Self said it's not a win at all cost tournament, even though if you play, you got to win. But I'm not going to go into thinking that we've got to grind to win this one. Let's play and hopefully get some guys a chance to play. Doing that would mean reserves like Sylvia DeSosa, who's back and eligible. He was on the bench at Texas Tech. Inaruna, McCormick, potentially could give some key starters a chance to rest. Udoka's got the ankle, of course, recently. Dotson's had the hip issue and an ankle injury. And the guy that has probably the worst injury of all three of them, and everybody talks about Udoka recently, it's Marcus Garrett's foot. He's in pain. He's got an arch problem. Supposedly he can't make it any worse. He's just got to fight through the pain. So if you're a KU fan, and you lose even to, say, Oklahoma State in the quarterfinals, that's not the worst thing. Because they would get rest and get ready for the NCAA tournament. And WKU fans that are greedy, they're going to want to win the tournament. They won the regular season title. They're going to win the tournament. And they're going to be, and then they'll, oh, God, we lost to Baylor in a Big 12 title game. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Who cares? Because you're going to go in as a one seed NCAA tournament, and that's how you're going to be judged. And that's how KU is always judged. That's why Bill Self catches grief across the country from some people, is that he doesn't win enough national championships. Okay. He's won one. He's been to two. He's been to three Final Fours. And he's been to a ton of Elite Eights. That's the knock. He can't get that. The Elite Eight game is one of the toughest of all. And he hasn't won as many Elite Eight games as you like, but his team rarely loses. Well, early in his career at KU, they lost in the first round, but they don't anymore. They don't lose in the first round.
No.
Last year, lost second round. I remember Udoka was hurt, and they lost, and KU was a 4, and Auburn was the 5, which can easily happen in the second round.
Yeah,
you know, that's no big upset. In fact, I thought Auburn would win, and I think you did too. So if you're Kansas, you got to approach this with, they're going to play these guys, don't get me wrong, but don't overdo it because there's a bigger fish to fry, and that's the tournament, the NCAA tournament, not the Big 12 tournament.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when you've got already this is all wrapped up already.
You won it outright, nothing to prove.
You lost one game in conference, and you have 3 losses on the season. I feel like you're probably going to be a one seed no matter what happens in that tournament.
Yeah.
It's not one of those.
Might be overall number one no matter
what. Yeah, exactly. It's like it's not one of those tournaments you go into like, oh, we got to win this game. We got to win out.
No,
it's not what it is. And, you know, there's some teams that need that it's important to them, but not when you're as high as ranked as they are and where they're at right now. It's about getting healthy and getting ready for a stretch run.
Absolutely. And you take a look at the tournament bracket here. KU, as I said, will take on either Oklahoma State or Iowa State. They'll play on Wednesday at 6 o'clock. TCU, the 7 seed, will take on the 10 seed K-State at 8 o'clock, which we know it won't be 8 o'clock. It'll be 8:30, 8:45. Those games on ESPNU. And then Texas will play 11:30, the 4 seed against Texas Tech, the 5 seed. And that's an interesting game. I think Texas needs that more than Tech, although Tech now has lost 4 in a row. Do you want to go into the NCAA tournament losing 5 in a row? I mean, do you want to go into Selection Sunday losing 5 in a row?
No.
That's a huge game. Texas and Texas Tech. And then KU, I said, against either the 8 or the 9. Baylor will get the winner of TCU or K-State. And Oklahoma will get West Virginia. As Oklahoma's a 3 seed, West Virginia the 6. And for most of the year, they would have inverted those seeds. Right?
That's unreal to me.
It is. Oklahoma ended up being 3rd in the Big 12 at 9 and 9. Four teams finished 9 and 9 in the conference. But yet people tell me the Big 12 was really good. Sorry, not going to buy it, the argument. Oklahoma, Texas, Texas Tech.
Third place team can't be 500.
Your third place team out of 10 teams can't be 500. 9-9 for Oklahoma, West Virginia, Texas Tech, and Texas. And Oklahoma gets the tiebreaker as the 3. Texas gets the 4. That tells you all you need to know. Tech's the 5, West Virginia's 6. And I think everybody would say the 5 and the 6 are better than the 3 and the 4. And so if KU in the semifinals would face either Texas Tech or Texas, I'm going to pick Tech to beat Texas, and I'm going to pick Tech to beat Kansas in the semifinals. I'm calling my shot right now. And Kansas can rest up. Tech's going to need these wins more so than Kansas. It helped them on the seed line. It actually would probably help the Big 12. And I think as long as Kansas doesn't lose to Oklahoma State or Iowa State in the quarterfinals, they're still going to be the number one overall seed, and they can pick where they're going to go. As long as they don't lose that first game. And even if they do, they might still be able to do it. Are you with me?
Yeah, for sure.
I don't think a loss to a Texas or Texas Tech in the semifinals would cost them a number one overall seed.
No.
Okay.
I don't think so.
Yeah, they're all the metrics, all the numbers point Kansas is going to be the favorite in the tournament. And I know sometimes you think I believe in conspiracy theories every once in a blue moon.
I do too, every once in a blue moon. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
See if you're with me on this conspiracy theory. If Max, if you're listening out there, he's a KU fan. I wonder what Max thinks about this. There are people in this world that believe that sports is fixed. I do believe that it can be fixed. I don't know. I don't necessarily believe it is fixed, but I do believe it can be fixed very easily. And Kansas right now, number one team in America, going to be probably the number one overall seed in the NCAA tournament. Do you think the NCAA wants Kansas to win the national championship this year?
Probably not.
Why not?
You want to see, like, underdog stories and things like that.
Oh, you're completely missing the picture here. Completely missing it. Think a little harder.
Well, you don't. No, because of the scandal, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Hello? Hello?
I just think the overall KU one seed, a lot of times they don't want to win anyway.
No,
they don't want. No, they don't.
Do you think the NCAA...
Not when you're in an FBI investigation.
The KU had Snoop Dogg. They had stripper poles before the year. And that gives a bad... I mean, it's college basketball. The NCAA, I'm sure, didn't love that.
Yeah.
They don't like the money, supposedly, all the violations they've alleged of Kansas. Kansas has basically said, listen, we think you're all full of baloney, and we're going to challenge everything, refuting everything. So it's a battle between lawyers from the NCAA versus lawyers from the University of Kansas or whatever representing them. It's a battle between, because the NCAA, you know, KU could win it all this year. The NCAA could strip them of the title next year for all we know. Or the NCAA could end up, you know, slapping them with a 3-year probation. We don't know what the penalty is going to be for Kansas. Do you really think the NCAA wants Kansas to win it all this year?
No.
I would tell you the answer I would think is unequivocally no. I think if they're, once again, I know it's a conspiracy theory. I'll see if Dusty agrees with me here or thinks it could possibly happen. I think KU fans, you better brace yourself. You better be, all this time and all over these years, here's what you hear. Well, in order to win at Allen Fieldhouse, you got to be what? 5 to 10 points better because the officials are on KU's side, right? KU's going to get that close call.
Yeah.
I'm going to say it right now. I think Kansas has to be a couple possessions better than almost everybody in the tournament to win it all. Because I think if it comes down to really super tight situation, I'm not saying it's rigged yet, but I'm just saying, I don't know if somebody in the NCAA is going to tell an officiating crew in the Final Four, hey, if it's close and it's in the final seconds, go the other way. Now, review can overturn it, make it clear, but if there's something not reviewable, if you can call a questionable charge,
you can't review a block charge.
You see where I'm going with this?
Yeah.
Or can you, like, purposely call a third foul on Devon Dotson late in the first half that changes the game? Or Udoka Azubuike? I'm just sitting here. Do you really want to see? Yeah, I would argue the NFL probably didn't want to see the Patriots win at all, and they have. So maybe that blows up my argument here. But that's a different organization. The NCAA, I don't think, wants to see KU win at all. I think they don't like the fact that KU's doing so well now. And now somebody could argue, well, if that's the case, Wade, why wouldn't the NCAA go ahead and make sure that Kansas loses some of these games so they're not a number one overall seed? I'd say, well, the Big 12's not very good.
Yeah.
So it's hard to make it with what doesn't even look completely obvious. But I think at tournament time, they're like, okay, KU's in there. That's good for us. It's a brand name. That's fine. And if KU makes the Final Four, that's fine. That's a brand name. But do they want Kansas cutting down the nets and then have to level all kinds of sanctions or probation or stripping of scholarships on the reigning national champion as soon as a few months after it happens or within a year? Do you really think that's a good look for the NCAA?
No, not at all.
So you're with me on this theory a little bit?
I am. Well, I'm with you on the theory of we talk about that a lot. Like, Big 12 teams get frustrated, like when you like what you just said. You know, you got to be 5 to 10 points better. You're playing 5-on-8, whatever, you know, however they want to say it. You know, you hear it all. But I'm telling you right now, even in years where KU's not under FBI investigation or NCAA investigation, they don't get the calls they do in the tournament like they do when they're playing at Allen Fieldhouse. We know that. I mean, that's a fact. And I think sometimes that just happens regularly.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're not getting the same kind of calls that they're normally used to.
Yeah, they don't.
And so you add to the fact what's going on this year with it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I could completely see that. I can easily see it's a 2-point lead for, let's say they're playing
Dayton.
Dayton, yeah, in the Elite Eight.
Actually, it probably needs to be a bigger, better name than the Elite Eight. Let's say it's Kansas and, well, let's say Duke.
Yeah, Duke could easily be a 2 seed, wherever they fall. So let's say, yeah, they're playing Duke and
or Kentucky.
And you know,
they have Dotson, their problems.
Dotson's driving and somebody's guarding him with 20 seconds left, KU down 2, and guy steps in front and jerks back, and they call a charge when it's
hammered,
a blocking foul.
Or, call it.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, they call a charge instead of a block on the drive, and Duke gets the ball back, and they go down and make a couple free throws and seal it or whatever. I can see that happening for sure, whether it does happen or not. I could see it.
I think Kansas better be a couple possessions better in those games, which is hard to do when you get to those games.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's going to happen. All I'm saying is it's something to think about, because it's not going to be good. And this is all assuming the NCAA actually can do what they can do, and Kansas does get penalized, whether it be after this season or before next year or even into next season, because there's a lot, everybody's lawyered up. So that'll slow down the whole process, as we know. KU had a 307-page formal response to the allegations recently. That killed a lot of trees. 307-page response. So if you don't think this is going to get uglier before it gets better, I think you're a little naive. This is going to be a battle between the NCAA and KU and legal situation and this and that. And you got the FBI stuff that was involved on top of it all that complicated even more. If I'm Mark Emmert, I'm the president of the NCAA, or if I'm a high-ranking official of the NCAA, I'm cheering against Kansas.
Oh, yeah.
I'm cheering against Kansas because you know what the jokes are going to be. All right, so you just had a alleged cheater, and I'm not saying KU did cheat. I don't think KU does a lot of things much worse than I don't know much worse. I don't know all the facts. But I'm going to say this. I think a lot of teams push the rules, bend the rules, twist the rules, and there's money changing hands all the time with all of the big-time programs. And I will say Kansas is one. I think you're extremely naive to think that money isn't changing hands between players and guardians or parents or boosters or alums. I mean, it happens at Kentucky. It happens at Duke. It happens at Kansas. It happens at UCLA. It happens at Michigan, probably. Michigan, we know what happened. Michigan State, even. I think it happens everywhere. The bigger big-time programs, it happens. Gonzaga, maybe, maybe not. I don't know about that one. But I think the big-time programs, it's happening, because if you don't, then you fall behind the Joneses, and then you're in trouble. So I think to an extent, all of them are cheating in some way or pushing the envelope a little bit too far. But the view for people outside of us here, like nationally, is that you know how people are. They convict people before they're actually proven innocent or guilty. Is that Kansas did something wrong. Kansas supposedly knew about it, and now Kansas wins it, and there's going to be a lot of talk if Kansas wins the NCAA tournament and they win a national championship and they're cutting down the nets. You don't think that's going to be brought up somehow, some way? People are going to say they're ahead of FBI investigation, the NCAA is investigating them, they have major allegations against them, lack of institutional control. You don't think that the NCAA is not going to be really fond of all this talk about their national champion with all these warts on it, or perceived warts, okay?
Yeah.
I think there's no way anybody in the NCAA office is going to admit it publicly on the record that they're cheering against anybody, but I would be willing to bet you there's somebody in that office that's hoping Kansas doesn't win the national championship.
Oh, yeah, without question.
Because of that.
It's just natural
to
have that happening.
Absolutely. If they believe Kansas cheated and they believe they got enough dirt and they believe that KU's not the honky goat, you know, Bill Self's not as clean as, you know, squeaky clean, blah, blah, blah. There are people within the NCAA and people just in general in the country that are going to be cheering against Kansas more so this year than ever before. Because this is going to be brought up tournament time.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be brought up Selection Sunday. It's going to be brought up if KU makes the Final Four. All this will continue to be a storyline. And KU, to their credit, the team has focused on playing, and they're the number one overall seed more than likely. They've been great this year despite what could have been a lot of distractions with that. I think Bill Self and the basketball program have handled this very well. It hasn't been a talking point every single day, so it hasn't been a distraction every day, but it's still there, and it's still simmering. And if there is a new development, you know how this works. It happens in politics all the time. Suddenly there's this skeleton out of the closet that pops out right at the wrong time for some political candidate, even though people have known it for 3 years. We see it in sports all the time, too, don't we? Who's to say there isn't a smoking gun that drops during the NCAA tournament about something involving Kansas? I'm not saying it will. I'm just saying I wouldn't be surprised. Wouldn't be surprised at all.
No.
Okay, let's get to K-State here. You know, we don't want to spend too much time on K-State, mainly because they ain't going anywhere unless they win 4 games in the Big 12 tournament. But there was something cool that happened, and that is when you have a senior that's, you know, put in the time, and it's a frustrating year, he had a great senior day. Xavier Sneed, 26 of his career, had 31 points in the first half. K-State finally breaks their losing streak as they beat Iowa State on senior day over the weekend, 79-63. K-State now 10-21 overall, 3-15 in the Big 12. They'll be the 10th seed of Big 12 tournament, led by as many as 24 in the second half. Pearson McAtee got a dunk early in the game. That's pretty cool. He's the other senior there on senior day, and K-State gets it done. Bruce Weber on Sneed's performance on senior day.
Coach Henderson talked since we got back from Oklahoma State just about not letting your teammates down, be special. Just don't be okay. Be special. And I thought, you know, X had the special first half. You know, some of them weren't great shots, but, you know, he was in a heat check and he made them. It, you know, it's a great finish for him for his Bramlage career. You know, didn't make many in the second half, but, you know, unbelievable first half, which got us the lead. You know, it's just good to get a win.
Well, good for Xavier Sneed. It's been a tough year. He was debating whether he's going to go pro or come back. It has not been what he thought it would be. I still think he's the type of player that could have a spot on an NBA roster. I believe he can. He's going to have to work hard to get there, but I think he can. But he's not going to be a star in the league or anything like that, I would highly doubt. K-State does get the win, breaks their losing streak. Wichita State needed a win, and they got it, and they got some help. Houston beat Memphis. Okay, Wichita State gets a first-round bye in the American Athletic Conference tournament. That is big for Wichita State. They get the win. Greg Marshall, head coach of the Shockers, beating Tulsa. Good win for his team.
I thought we got so many good performances today, and just to honor Jamie Ichinike and send him off with a win, our 23rd of the year. Now I think we finished fourth, which is exactly where we were predicted to finish. We get UConn in the quarterfinals. We don't have to play on Thursday. But I thought in order to beat them today, you were going to have a really good effort because they had a lot at stake as well, trying to play themselves into an at-large berth and a share of a conference regular season crown. So, but it was really good.
So he's... Okay, so you're just saying UConn's going to beat Tulane, I guess, is what he's saying.
Yes,
okay.
That's what I said in my sports this morning. You heard from Coach Marshall, but UConn actually has to win first that's a matchup.
They do have to win first. UConn against Tulane coming up, and then the Shockers will play coming up on the 13th. It will be Friday the 13th. That's probably why he saw this, because on the Wichita State website, it says UConn versus Tulane, the quarterfinals on Friday. I think what they're trying to say is the winner of UConn-Tulane, but it doesn't look very clear on their website. But they will play the winner of UConn-Tulane, and they'll play on Friday at 2 o'clock. Where is that going to be at?
Fort Worth.
Fort Worth, Texas?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
It's a long trip for a lot of teams. They showed a map. I just had a game
Why
on last night
Fort
while
Worth?
I was just reading a book. It was on my TV, and I saw the thing. I have no idea, but, like,
wow.
There's a lot of teams that have to travel over 1,000 miles to get there.
Holy shnikes.
Yeah, it's weird.
Shockers 23-8, 11-7 American, sole possession of fourth place in the AAC with that loss by Memphis to Houston. How about Memphis? Preseason Final Four selection, then the Wiseman kid after three games decided see you later, which is the right move on his part.
Yeah.
And Memphis is not going to go to the NCAA tournament unless they win the AAC, it looks like. So Shockers still got to win probably a game or two to feel really secure about making the tournament.
And they're doing okay right now, but you definitely need to go in there and get at least one win.
Somebody steals a bid from some of these other mid-major leagues, that could hurt you. All right, the NBA, this was pretty funny stuff. I think people that listen to the show on a regular basis know that I'm not the biggest James Harden fan, all right? I'm going to lay it out there. I think James Harden is a wonderful offensive talent who gets away with traveling almost all the time. And listen, anybody that watches the NBA, if you don't think James Harden is traveling on his step back, then I don't know what traveling is. I mean, the guy will actually take a hop with 2 feet to his left after putting the dribble on the floor. He actually moves both feet. And no wonder it's hard to defend. It's an illegal move.
Yeah.
It is. So he can score a lot of points. He has the ball in his hands a ton. He gets these gaudy numbers with assists. He rebounds at times, which in NBA you can get rebounds in a short guy anymore. He can shoot threes really well, and there's times where he can't hit the broadside of a barn. He's a little bit streaky, but he's a scorer. I mean, he's not I don't think he's a complete player. I saw somebody make an argument that Harden has better numbers when it comes to specific stats than Giannis when it comes to defense. If you think Harden's a better defensive player than Giannis, then you really have lost your mind when it comes to delving into the statistics so far. What they leave out of the statistics is the defensive efficiency, different things. But they show steals. Well, of course, he's going to have more steals.
He's a guard.
You know?
They play two different positions. You are going to find some better numbers for Harden than Giannis.
Yes. So, Harden's kind of took a subtle shot at Giannis recently, saying, you know, I just don't go down and dunk or something like that. Well, that's not what Giannis does. But it was kind of a subtle shot. Giannis kind of came back. And Giannis, when he was selecting his team for the NBA All-Star game, he didn't draft Harden. He picked somebody else. He said, I want somebody that wants to pass. I think that's what started it. I think it was just a joke, but I thought it was funny. Anyway, the Rockets were in Charlotte Saturday night. James Harden scored 30 points, 14 assists, 10 rebounds. That's a good night, right?
Yeah.
That's a real good night. That's a triple-double. But the thing is, Harden was going for something even more special. Oh, yeah. Their rare quadruple-double. Here's Eric Collins, play-by-play announcer on Hornets TV, getting pretty excited about Harden closing in on a quadruple-double.
Dubious one. He is one turnover away from his 10th turnover, which would give him a dubious quadruple. There it is! Oh, my goodness! 10 turnovers for James Harden! A quadruple-double! I don't think anyone's ever gotten excited about a turnovers engine. That's history, folks. A quadruple-double for James Harden in points, rebounds, assists, and turnovers.
The only he can top it off is fouling out. He's got 5 fouls.
Those guys were having too much fun. And the Hornets were winning by 10, by the way, so that makes it even sweeter for them to say that. I thought that was funny stuff. I mean, that's not the quadruple-double you want. There have been quadruple-doubles before where a guy can have rebounds, assists, steals, or blocks along with points. That's happened before.
Yeah.
But Harden, this is not the first time he's had a quadruple-double and he had turnovers as part of it. He's done it 2 other times.
Wow.
He's done it 3 times in his career over the last 3 years. He's had games where he's had over 10 turnovers to go along with over 10 rebounds, 10 assists, and 10 points. So something to be proud of, I guess.
Or not.
The Lakers, you should have seen that 10th turnover. It was a really bad pass. The Lakers beat the Clippers, battle L.A. The Lakers now clearly are the team to beat to win the NBA title, beating the Clippers 112-103, correct?
Yeah.
I disagree.
As much as I don't like to say it.
I disagree. I think the Clippers are still.
Yeah,
I'm still
well, I mean,
the
if the Clippers are all the way where they need to be, I would still pick them. But
they're going
I just don't
be.
Know
they're going to be.
Where they're at right now.
Trust me, they're going to
yeah.
be.
Yeah.
The Clippers all year long, it hasn't been about getting the one seed. It's about getting everybody healthy, getting on the same page. George and Leonard haven't played a ton of games together. Leonard's had load management. George was hurt the first month of the season. They now got, what was it, Marcus Morris they brought into the fray. Beverly, when they get to the playoffs, you know, Beverly was on the team, but he's an outstanding defensive player. They get in the playoffs, it's going to be all about defense, and you're going to have more rest, which is going to help both teams, the Lakers with AD and LeBron, and it's going to help the Clippers. I think those two, I don't see anybody preventing the Lakers or Clippers from meeting each other in the Western Conference Finals from what I'm seeing in the West.
Not right now.
The Nuggets, I don't think, are physical enough to handle it. But I still think the Clippers, I said before the year, it's their championship to win or lose. I stand by that because I'm not worried at all. You know, everybody was all worried about the Chiefs, remember, 6-4, and they lost to Tennessee, and they're no way they're a Super Bowl contender, not playing like this. Like, listen, the Clippers aren't playing great ball right now, but they beat the Lakers the first two times they played, and I know one of those, George didn't even play. So we can get all riled up about the Lakers beating the Clippers. Okay, fine, it's the most recent game, I get it. But at the same time, do you think the Clippers are overly worried they lost to the Lakers? No. The other thing is there's no home court advantage. They both play on the same floor. So that's no big deal. I don't think the Clippers or Lakers are worried about who they match up with in the first or second round. I don't think they care because they know they're both really good. So I think it's going to be a battle of L.A. like most people thought before the season began. I think LeBron's having an MVP-type season. He's been phenomenal this year. Giannis should probably win it. His numbers are out of the stratosphere. But when it comes to the playoffs, Kawhi Leonard's not worried about regular season MVP. Neither is Paul George. Neither is Doc Rivers. The Clippers, it's all about building to where they're playing their best ball at the end of the season. And listen, I'll give you an example. The Houston Rockets made the NBA Finals. They were a 6 seed. You remember that year? Remember that? They came off the year before. They won the NBA title. The next year, they struggled the year, and I think they brought in Drexler. They had to work on the chemistry, and they kept saying, we're not worried about our record. It's all about peaking once we hit the playoffs. That's all they kept saying was, we're going to get on the same page. It's all about developing team chemistry. It's going to take time. We're going to have growing pains. We're going to have losses. But at the end of the day, we think it's going to pay off for us by making that deal and getting Clyde Drexler on our team. And guess what happened?
They won the championship.
They won the championship as a 6 seed. I don't think seeding matters at
Magic.
All. What's that?
Swept the Magic.
That's
in
right.
The finals.
I do not believe that seeding means anything in the Western Conference because the Lakers and the Clippers are going to be the two teams at the end of the year, if they're healthy, that are going to be in the Western Conference Finals. And if it's a best of 7, I'm going to still pick the Clippers. I'm still taking the Clippers.
Yeah.
I really am. I still think Kawhi, when he's on his game, is maybe the best player in the league. Maybe the most complete player, although Giannis is an amazing talent, don't get me wrong. And LeBron's still amazing as well. But Doc Rivers has won a championship as a head coach. Frank Vogel has not. I know there are lots of players on both teams that have some rings. I get all that, including LeBron and Kawhi. George, of course, doesn't have one. But I just still think that I'm not going to get all riled up because the Lakers beat the Clippers in a regular season game late in the year. Because I still think the Clippers are the team that's going to win it because they're going to play the best defense and they still have offensive weapons and they're deep. They're a little deeper than the Lakers are, which maybe that helps. Maybe it doesn't when you get to the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, you're probably pulling your rotation slimming it down, trimming it down just a little bit in the playoffs. So I don't know how much the depth makes as much difference as maybe you would think it would. But, yeah, I mean, if the Clippers are fully healthy, you know, everybody's going at 100%. I agree with you for sure. So that's going to be the question.
The Clippers have had all these injuries this year. They've had load management. They've added some players. They're still working on chemistry. They're still the 2 seed in the West.
Yeah.
Despite all that, they're still the 2 seed. And we still have 20 games to play, 19 games to play. Are your Spurs going to make the playoffs?
Doesn't look very good. No, I'm not.
They're 5 out.
Not planning on it.
5 out.
They continue to lose. They're not playing well at all right now.
And their streak of 50 win seasons came to an end.
Yeah. And
tough year.
Yeah, 22 years in a row in the playoffs about to end this year.
Every streak must come to an end, right? And we end, a couple things here. The Big 12 Men's Basketball Awards have come out. Udoka Azubuike is the Player of the Year. And Dotson was on first team for KU. Marcus Garrett, the defensive player of the year, no surprise there. Coach of the year, Scott Drew of Baylor. Did they vote on this before they started losing? How do you don't get coach of the year when you lose one game in conference? Bill Self's got enough awards, he don't care. How does Bill Self not win the award when he goes 17-1 in conference?
It's the same thing we talk about pretty much.
Bill Self can win it every year, so we don't give it to him. Like LeBron can get MVP every year, but we don't give it to him.
And Baylor overachieved for sure from what they were supposed to
be here. I don't think anybody thought KU was supposed to be the number one overall seed and go 17-1.
No,
so I would say they exceeded expectations, too.
I would, too, but you know how it is. Oh, sure. I would pick Bill Self to be the coach of the year.
I would, too.
Maybe that's another deal where they're under investigation. We don't want to give it to Bill Self.
Well, but they gave it.
Player of the year and defensive player of the year, but not
maybe that's the thing.
Can't give them all three of the awards.
Maybe they're like, listen, we've got two. There's only one team that has two first-teamers. That's Udoka and Devon Dotson for KU. KU's got the defensive player of the year in Garrett and the player of the year in Azubuike, which I would have given it to Dotson instead of Azubuike myself because he's been consistent all year long. And then, you know what? But we're going to hold off on the coach of the year. We're going to give that to Scott Drew. I think you get to the point where they vote and they're like, we just can't give them everything. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And I think that's what happens. And you're right. The investigation might have something to do with that. You very well could be right.
I have no idea. I mean, it didn't have anything to do with the player of the year, I guess. But, you know, Doak wasn't the player that was in question.
Right.
And neither is Marcus Garrett for defensive player.
If it's Sylvia DeSosa, he might not have got it.
Might have something to do with it.
Could be.
That's, you know.
How about the All-Big 12 defensive first team? Baylor has three guys. KU has two. That's it. Nobody else got on the first team defensively. Gillespie, Mitchell, and Vital of Baylor. Azubuike, Garrett for KU. Big 12 all-freshman team, Christian Brown of Kansas made that. Is there anybody for K-State on this list? Honorable mention.
X is on
Xavier Sneed for K-State, honorable mention. Abaji was honorable mention for KU as well. So there you have it. It's all posted at Big12Sports.com.
3-15 in the Big 12.
He's probably not going to get a lot of awards. He probably shouldn't.
No, not at all.
No.
I was on, you know, X had a good finish there, but he didn't have a great year. But I think that it was probably like throw him a bone, give somebody something.
If X had a great year, they wouldn't have been 3-15.
No.
I'm not saying that was all his fault, but they definitely wouldn't have been 3-15 if he had a great year. None of those seniors for K-State had a good year, let alone a great year. And we end with this, a little bit of a negative, but we need to report it in case you're curious, or maybe not curious, but you're going to hear about it anyway, or you may be wondering about this. I know I've wondered about it here recently, about would the NCAA tournament be impacted by the coronavirus?
Mm-hmm.
What about the NBA playoffs, any kind of sporting event, any kind of big concert? Well, we have seen over in other countries that soccer matches without anybody being at the match. We've already seen a few things happen here in the United States. We've seen the NHL ban media from team dressing rooms. The NBA's informed teams that should stop post-game handshakes and that they can do a fist bump, but no handshakes. And now the first ever sporting event that has been postponed due to the coronavirus here in the United States, the 2020 BNP Paribas Open. It's a tennis tournament that's held in California, which is now under a public health emergency due to the coronavirus. They hope to reschedule it later on, but as of now, they don't want to... endanger anybody and have this big event out there. It's one of 9 ATP Tour Master 1000 tournaments. So it's a pretty decent-sized tournament.
Yeah.
And it has been postponed due to the coronavirus. So we'll see if more sporting events take that lead or not. And if so, we'll let you know.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.